Okay, and welcome back. Hour number two. We're going to talk to Ted Pike this hour. Reverend Ted, of course, as you know from his years of visits on this program, has fought to protect and preserve what's left of our First Amendment, our right to freedom of speech, and has done extraordinary things to work for all of us. And fortunately, he has been successful most all the time. We still don't have chains around our tongues, although that's coming. And remember, once they control freedom of speech, freedom of thought is one half step behind. You become afraid to think about what you might say. That's how the game is played. Ted, welcome back. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Always a pleasure. All right. What's first on your plate tonight?
Well, I am concerned about the hate crimes agenda worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sending out an article to you Sunday night in which I give a kind of an update at the end of the year of where we are in the battle for free speech worldwide, not just in Canada or the United States, but also in Britain and elsewhere. And tonight, maybe I could just give a little recap of some of my thoughts on that and encourage people to come to truthtellers.org for the full article.
Very good. Well, we will. We'll post it Sunday night and drive as many people over as we can.
Yes. You know, back in 1989, when I first became aware of the threat of hate crimes legislation, largely through the Spotlight newspaper and their reporting.
Yeah, I remember the Spotlight. That's right. They used to do some interesting work.
They certainly did. They blew the cover, in fact, off of the ADL's massive spying on Muslims and Christians and conservatives out in California. And that drew me into that subject, and I realized, as I continued to research it, that Canada was already very far downriver as far as being in the toils of a hate crimes Gestapo. The ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, and B'nai B'rith Canada had actually brought in the federal hate crimes law in 1971.
Uh-huh.
And I began to speak out, and as most listeners know, my particular calling in this ministry is to waken up the evangelicals, particularly those who have bought into Zionist the misinformation. I began to warn the evangelicals about the dangers to Christianity posed by ADL hate laws, and they always got the same response. I said these hate laws are created by Jews for the purpose of persecuting Christianity. They always got the same response. Oh, no, that's anti-Semitic, they said. The truth is that hate laws were created by the homosexual lobby. And
what they told you. Talk about being brainwashed. Wow.
Absolutely. Right to my face. Somehow the homosexual lobby, you know, these chaotic homosexuals had contrived these very, very devious, entrapping laws with basically legal genius figuring out ways to take us in our speech, to make us hate criminals. And yet, as time went on, it became very clear. The ADL's website, ADL.org, was very, very voluble, very open in its advocacy of hate crimes law, describing how it was doing that in Europe and advocating for state passage and so on.
Sure.
It became clear in the middle of the 2005 and on, especially with the persecution of Christians in Philadelphia under the ADL's National Executive Board member, Lynn Abraham, that the ADL was squarely in the middle of hate crimes creation and prosecution worldwide. And the problem was that I wasn't getting the kind of reaction I wanted out of the evangelicals. I wanted to convince them that rather than God's chosen people being so wonderful and benevolent toward Christianity, here was a first-class conspiracy, literally to lock up Christians, to harass them and fetter them with all kinds of entrapping legislation. And my hope was, but by dramatizing and bringing to the attention of evangelicals the Jewish supremacist aspect and conspiracy of this, they would take it a little slower about being so much in support of Israel and unconditional support of Zionism. It didn't work out that way. What happened was when the evangelicals began to realize that I was right and that the homosexuals were nothing but cannon fodder for the ADL and their desire to trash Christian civilization, what happened was that the evangelicals got scared. They said, well, if God's chosen people are right in the middle of this hate crimes conspiracy, we'd better get as far away from the hate crimes issue as possible.
Wow, the worst possible response.
Exactly. And what happened was that even though I battled the passage of the federal hate crimes bill since 1998, and we were able to successfully defeat it no less than five times, nevertheless, what I saw was going on in the evangelicals was less and less fight as the years went on. We were winning against all odds, holding it back, delaying it. The ADL was terribly frustrated. But the big leaders of the evangelical right, particularly James Dobson and others, just were losing more and more and more steam until finally, in 2009, the Matthew Shepard hate bill finally did pass, but what I found was that far from them waking up and becoming activists and so on, the superstition that God would curse them if they got near the hate crimes issue and criticized ADL was so strong that it actually resulted in the practically the exit of evangelical right wing leadership from this fight.
I'm just amazed that 30, 35 million Americans literally can be galvanized into such monumental self-destructive stupidity. It boggles my brain. What is wrong with these people, Ted? They're really, some of them obviously have intelligence. This is just not rational. It's not logical. It's absurd.
Well, the problem is theological confusion, and there's one form of insanity, and you can deal with it with drugs. There's another insanity called theological insanity, in which people become terribly led astray by idealistic concepts of religion that are so wrong that it makes basically cult fanatics out of them, and that's where the evangelicals right now are. Zionist Christianity is one of the great cults of Christendom of all time. I'm talking about as much of a cult as the great heresies of Christianity in the first centuries of the church. This is a major aberration that causes literally millions, tens of millions of evangelicals, like lemmings. You know how lemmings get a compulsion to swim out in the Arctic Ocean?
Well, I've read about it.
Well, the same thing is true right now, and what I've been doing, of course, is to point out. In fact, in a recent article, you just posted it today. I believe the title of the article was "The Old Testament: A Friend of Anti-Zionists." I point out that the Bible is full of criticism of these ADL-type Jews. All the great prophets, including Jesus and John the Baptist, were very outspoken. You can't get any more vitriolic against the Pharisees than Jesus Christ himself. So the very Bible of these Bible-thumping evangelicals is full of cautions and warnings against the kind of unconditional support of Israel, which they're revealing today. In fact, the Old Testament law of Moses is one of the most anti-Zionist documents you can find. It has dozens, literally dozens of the clearest verses, absolutely forbidding wicked and oppressive, disobedient Jews, a nation of Jews, from ever going into Palestine and occupying Palestine, which was God's holy land, in unbelief. In fact, Moses himself, for one relatively small infraction, was banned by God from going into Canaan land. And yet, the evangelicals have become so brainwashed and bought in to the Zionist propaganda and a superficial understanding of what God's covenant with Abraham was really all about. It was always about obedience. If the Jews would obey, if they would exercise justice and righteousness to the poor and the stranger in the land, God said he would bless them and he'd let them go into the land and he'd give them a place of safety, a safe haven there from the forces surrounding them. But it was all conditional upon obedience. But what's happened is that modern Calvinism teaches that we as Christians can enter into a covenant with God through the so-called newborn experience, which is unconditional. We can never be lost no matter what we do, no matter what sins we commit if we've soundly been born again. And what the evangelicals have done is they've transferred that doctrinal theological error right over to Israel and saying, well, Israel also has a covenant with God. They have a special pipeline to the Almighty of favor. They are the apple of his eye, and they can't get out of his favor no matter what they do. And so the average evangelical looks to Israel as a great inspiration. Israel can be in sin, but she's under God's covenant, and we can be under sin, but we're under God's covenant also. So in answer to your question, there are deep theological errors. These people are not just stupid. These people are massively theologically out of their minds with great errors in fundamental Christian doctrine.
Wow. Wow, not encouraging, not at all. All right, we're talking to Ted Pike, and we'll come back and continue our conversation after this. Okay, talking to Ted, as we do every so often, about the state of affairs in this country. And when you have 35 million people who are so deranged in terms of really grasping reality and making a good show of things, it gets to be an almost impossible situation. Ted, how could these people be gotten to? How could you re-educate them? How could you free them from the bonds of being so ignorant that they are, in fact, dangerous?
Well, actually, we have thousands of evangelicals who come to our website, truthtellers.org. I've been fighting this fight since the early 1980. My book, Israel, Our Duty, Our Dilemma, was produced in 1984, and many, many evangelicals have come over. The problem is that There is also major media and major religious seminaries and institutions, vested pro-Zionist lobby within the evangelical community going back literally for 100 years. With the advent of Zionism at the turn of the turn of the 20th century, the ADL, its lobbies and its public PR representatives went out to the evangelicals and enlisted them in the support for return of the Jews to Palestine and Zionism and so on. And so it's been a very, very much of an uphill fight. But on the other hand, the truth that we have spoken consistently now since the early 1980s has radiated out very widely. And as I was just mentioning, there's no question now in evangelical leadership that the ADL, the Jewish supremacists, are out to get the evangelicals. They're out to entangle them as domestic terrorists and hate criminals and so on. Everybody knows this. The WorldNet Daily knows this. The FRC knows this. Everybody knows this. In fact, it's unheard of now that any evangelical leader is going to say that the homosexual lobby is behind hate laws. It's just that the evangelicals now, rather than going toward the truth, are going away. They're hiding themselves from this reality. And actually, it is a good thing that the Republicans did get control of the House. And even though the federal hate bill passed just before that Tea Party victory, Republican victory, an upset of Democratic control of the House, it has meant a complete stop to ADL hate crimes legislation coming through. In fact, ADL introduced their H.R. 909 back several years ago, and it's languished in committee. This is an anti-bullying bill which would federalize as a hate crime any criticism of homosexuality in U.S. public education, all right, the way down to kindergarten. But it's gone nowhere because, despite their many imperfections and pro-Zionist loyalties, the Republicans have been against the hate laws. So it's a mixed bag, but the problem is, as I say, that this is very deeply ideologically and theologically entrenched, in the new right. What I'd kind of like to do tonight is to, as I said, I do have an article giving a recap, an overview of where we are in the hate bill, hate law struggle worldwide. Let me just talk a little bit for some of our listeners, just to give them a brief overview of what hate laws are all about. Hate crime laws are unique in the history of Jewish jurisprudence because they unabashedly guarantee government protection of a very small percentage of the population, which include homosexuals, Jews, Muslims, right. Latinos, and blacks, and so on.
Well, whatever happened to the old cliched expression, rights of the minority, but ruled by the majority?
Yes, the Republican form of government, protection of the rights of the minority. Hate laws are blatantly favoritistic toward these so-called victims of white Christian male persecution over the centuries. And it's astonishing that even though in the first few sentences of any hate law on a state or federal level in any country in the world, it gives the impression that everyone is given equal protection from hate crimes, that is not the case. It is absolutely not the case. It's a blatant lie right out front, which is there for the purpose of enticing gullible legislators into thinking hate laws are like other kinds of laws. Hate laws are in gross violation of basic idea of equality under the law. And we have a video at Truth Tellers of Eric Holder, U.S. Attorney General, just stating it flat out before the House, the Senate Judiciary Committee, just clearly stating this is a special kind of legal system giving special protection to some and absolutely denying the same protection to the vast majority. So that's what hate crimes laws are basically all about. They're an attack, a favoritistic attack, coming from the ADL. The ADL is now very, very proud of what it's done in Canada, what it's done in the United States. No bones about it. They are the authors. They've come out recently with a statement saying that their lawyers are singularly responsible for creating the whole idea of hate crimes legislation and promoting it in the world. And
got it?
I'll continue after the music.
Okay, very good. You have sharp ears. All right. Reverend Ted Pike, very important material here. If we lose our First Amendment, we aren't in immediate jeopardy of it now, but the enemies of freedom of speech are not going to go away. Keep that in mind. And this is not just something in this country. It's a worldwide program. Back with Ted in just a minute. Hate speech, hate crimes, hate laws. The assault on your right to speak your mind and have your opinion continues behind the scenes. They're not going away, these people. Believe me. They're encroaching in every possible venue, moving always inexorably forward toward total control. When will they get there? Well, they won't if we stop them. Ted has been leading that drive for a long time. All right, Ted, go ahead.
Yes, what I'd like to do in this last half hour is just to give some real encouragement to people about how that with the passage of time, even though the legislators were gullible and the people didn't care, people have noticed in the Western nations, they've noticed that hate crimes laws have a consistent effect of creating bizarre, a lack of equality and justice in indicting innocent people, often for the words they say and so on. And there are movements afoot now to repeal these laws. Let's just go up to Canada.
Okay.
Several years ago, the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal astonishingly declared that Section 13, which is the Internet Hate Law of Canada, was unconstitutional. And then this June, the Tory-led contingent in the House of Commons actually repealed Section 13 of the federal hate law. And this is unprecedented. It hasn't been approved yet by the Senate, but that is expected. This is overwhelmingly good news for many in Canada, including some very, very beleaguered patriots who've been under the jackboot of this terrible law. People like Terry Tremaine and Brad Love and others have been literally living a hell on earth, forced not even to be able to communicate to other people their ideas, and forced off the internet and so on. And so this is very good news. Of course, the main part of the federal hate law, which is Section 319, which was passed in 1971, is still intact. But there are heroic fighters in Canada for freedom, such as Paul Fromm and his Canadians for Free Expression, as well as the battling barrister Doug Christie and others, for continuing to battle for a repeal of mm-hmm. Section 319.
Yes.
Now, the same, similarly, Reverend Stephen Boissonne, who's been under restrictions, literally a gag order from the federal hate police in Canada for 10 years. Reverend Stephen Boissonne was recently completely vindicated. What happened in 2002 was Boissonne, a pastor, simply wrote a letter to a newspaper criticizing, quote-unquote, the homosexual machine and, quote-unquote, the militant homosexual agenda. For that one letter, a homosexual professor claiming that his feelings were hurt and that Boissonne's letter to the editor had influenced some roughnecks to beat up a homosexual, for that he was indicted, he was arrested, indicted, and the hate crimes tribunal fined him $5,000 to be paid to the professor who claimed that his feelings were hurt. Then for 3 years, Boissonne was forced not to utter one word in public in criticism of homosexuality. Unfortunately, just recently, the Alberta, two higher courts in Alberta confirmed that Boissonne was basically innocent, and there were no grounds for the fine and the other mm-hmm. restrictions that had been laid upon him.
Right.
Tremendous, tremendous victory. And those are some highlights out of Canada. Let's just jump over to Britain. In 1986, the ADL's British hate law was passed. It's Section 5 of Britain's public safety law. And what it basically says is, in Britain, here's a quote. It says, a person is guilty of an offense if he, A, this is from the Public Safety Act, if he, A, uses threatening, abusive, or insulting words or behavior, or disorderly behavior, or B, displays any writing, sign, or other visible representation which is threatening, abusive, or insulting within the hearing or sight of a person likely to be caused harassment, alarm, or distress thereby. This is a pure speech crimes law that can be interpreted just about any way that a so-called civil liberties group or an aggrieved homosexual, a Zionist wants to take it. And what's happened in the British Isles, in Wales, England, Ireland, and so on, is there have been massive, literally massive arrests for hate crimes over the years. We're talking about more than 12,000 a year in Ireland and Wales. And what happens is people simply make a statement under their breath at the pub. It's overheard, gets reported to the police, and they get indicted. Now, in these countries like Canada and Britain, you don't have the triple penalty system here like you have in the United States.
Right.
Over there, it's a much more common offense. Literally in the tens of thousands have proliferated since this law came into existence, and you just get fined. It's almost a lesser thing, and they have a tendency not to go after the big people, the prominent figures, members of parliament, whatever, who make such statements that are indiscreet. But bringing in lots of little people on the ground level and teaching the common people exactly what is political correct. Now, one of the really bright aspects of this now is that Rowan Atkinson, who is a very well-known, internationally known actor, he's known as Mr. Bean, he's powerfully leading efforts to have the above section of the Public Safety Act removed, or at least radically modified. And such repeal is urgent because increasing numbers of writers and comedians and political commentators and pundits and Christians and so on, they can't pursue their lives without looking over their shoulder. Somehow they've said even a word that is politically incorrect. And there are all kinds. There are volumes of horror stories, bizarre, comedic horror stories about how this law has been abused.
Well, all right. Well, Mr. Bean on our side, that's a big plus. All right.
It is.
All right. Very good. Hold on. Ted Pike and I will be right back as we continue to assay the current status of our right to free speech and freedom of thought by extension. Nothing more important than that. And we shall continue after this. Okay, I'm back with Ted. Ted, how are they working on the sidelines, in the background, to do this? They're lobbying, we know that. What are the dirty tricks being used to try to take away our First Amendment?
Well, the problem is that since hate laws began 30 and even more than that years ago, they have been working very quietly and literally while the Christian conservative movement in America especially was asleep, and certainly patriots in Europe were not watching. They've been able to set all these laws in stone, basically. So basically, all I have to do is sit back, the ADL, the neighborhood people, and just kind of watch a devious system work its way out in the courts as it is attacking, victimizing Christians. Here's just a brief quote from LifeSite News recently. It says, concerning the British hate law, Section 5, it says, Section 5 charges are increasingly being levied by police against conservative Christians who object to either the homosexual lifestyle or the government's plan to institute gay marriage. One of them is Adrian Smith, a Christian who recently tweeted, quote, if the state wants to offer civil marriages to the same sex, that's up to the state. But the state mustn't impose its rules on places of faith and worship. For that one tweet, it says that although his position is held by about 80% of the British population, Mr. Smith was arrested and charged under Section 5, the hate law. In fact, his employer, sympathizing with the government, docked Smith 40%. There are just hundreds of cases like that in Britain as a result of this perverse ADL legislation. And however, the good news is that LifeSiteNews.com also says that the campaign to reform Section 5 is drawing a surprisingly broad array of supporters. The campaign also claims 60 supporters in the House of Commons and the House of Lords, including parliamentary leader Nigel Page. But we better make sure we get the United States here and what's happening in America, because unfortunately I can't bring out too much good news in America. In the U.S., the bad news is that the federal hate crimes bill, which passed just before the Republican Congress, has come in, and after a year or so of a kind of waiting, as ADL was kind of sensing the pulse of the country, it's now being enforced with a vengeance. 16 cases have been tried under the Matthew Shepard hate crimes bill, and 15 of them have been won by the U.S. Justice Department. And by far the most shocking is, and threatening to freedom, I believe, was the conviction this summer of 14 Amish zealots who were found guilty of the federal hate crimes of forcing the cutting of hair and beards of their theological rivals.
Yeah.
They have been sentenced to prison sentences between 14 years in prison and life in prison for cutting the hair.
Yeah.
And they view this obviously as an extension of the traditional Amish ban of shunning their theological opponents or those who disagreed with Amish doctrine. They went too far, obviously. They acted like hooligans. But here in the United States, under the federal hate law, you have triple penalties so that any assault is tripled. Any conspiracy that's involved in it, hiding of information or whatever, is tripled. And so you get these staggering, practically lifetime sentences out of really what should be considered an assault. And it's certainly wrong to do what they did, but it should be treated as the basically the lesser crime that it was.
All right, well said. The Republicans maintain control of the House, so we should be okay in that regard. Are they standing firm, Ted, as far as you can tell? Do they get it?
They certainly are as far as hate crimes legislation. You have all of the fighters there, Louis Gohmert and Steve King and others, all passionately pro-Israel, unfortunately, but also very dedicated to holding back. They see through the ADL bias and thought crimes legislation. And meanwhile, of course, the ADL and Southern Poverty Law Center are just straining to get a bona fide case of a right-wing shooter, either in the religious right or the far right or the anti-Zionist right, somewhere in the right, who has all of the right stuff, who's the perfect shooter that they can tie in with other far-right or anti-Zionist organizations. And this summer, the ADL was testifying before the Senate and rejoicing. Mm-hmm. In fact, the day before the Amish were sentenced, the ADL Foxman was rejoicing that their long-anticipated and cherished federal hate crimes bill was now going forth splendidly in enforcement in America. And what they're wanting is the perfect shooter to come along out of the right that they can tie in to all the rest of us, saying Ted Pike influenced and so on. Because under Title 18, Section A of the Civil Rights Act of 1965, if it can be established that some broadcaster or writer like you and I have influenced commission of a hate crime, we also can be tried right in the docket with the actual shooter and receive the same penalty.
Well, see, this is another step toward absolute dictatorial Bolshevik control of this country.
Yeah.
And if we allow this to happen, Ted, I guess in a way we deserve our fate. We cannot allow it to happen.
That's right. In fact, getting back to Stephen Boissonnière in Canada, you see, he wrote a letter to the editor, and his words allegedly influenced others to commit a violent act. Therefore, he becomes a hate criminal, is tied up in tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars legal bills to save his freedom and so on, because he influenced. That's fundamental to this idea of collective punishment. It's fundamental to these ADL Zionist Jews who are wanting to entrap as many as possible. And I find the Amish case very ominous because here is a large group. Here's 14 Christians. Not the kind of Christians I'd like to see them to be, but they're nominally 14 Christians who've been rounded up. That's a small church. And what ADL is wanting to do is to establish legal precedent that can literally take in large numbers
a whole
of
congregation
at the same
if necessary.
Time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Their idea is to go after huge blocks of the evangelical and community, even the free speech community, anti-Zionists on campus, etc., huge blocks of people. They want to have them declared domestic terrorists or whatever, and a threat to the war on terror, as seditionists, whatever. They want to be able to categorize and stereotype large numbers of people and take them in, put a noose around all of them at the same time.
All right. Well said. So what's next on the horizon?
Well, I would love to see some kind of an organized movement, especially coming out of evangelical right-wing judicial lawyer think tanks, that would begin a strategic program to declare the Matthew Shepard hate crimes bill unconstitutional. No piece of legislation in American history is as flimsy and as unconstitutional as the federal hate law. Right in the first line, it promises equality of protection under the law and then completely denies it in word and in action. And it seems to me it should be very simple to declare it unconstitutional. But as I've said, I think the religious right, the conservatives are kind of resting on their laurels and getting all those Republicans in the House, and they are not moving forward on this. Meanwhile, that very bill is moving forward, establishing, laying up an arsenal, literally, of 15 cases now in its favor, and the ADL, the Justice Department holder, the Homeland Security, they are very selective in the cases they are choosing. They are blatantly discriminating against other people who have been victims of attacks by Jews or attacks by homosexuals or attacks by blacks. They don't get equality of defense under the federal hate bill. But what they're doing is they're stacking the legal books with cases in favor of indicting Christians, free speech advocates, people on the right, people who are critical of Israel, and so on. And what happens there, you see, is then that when these cases come to law, they go to the law books, they look for the precedents, and they find only cases that are moving the government toward a prosecution of the right
of
people,
course.
Which are the,
yep.
are the Christians.
Yep.
And this is all going forward while the new right, while the religious conservative right are ignoring this issue, are terrified of ADL, and are doing nothing. But we have to move aggressively, just like they're doing in Canada, just like they're doing in Britain. We have to move aggressively to stop the federal hate bill, because this is bizarre. Here we're starting out in creation of this new federal hate Gestapo, while these countries of Canada and England are suffering and bruised from 30 or 40 years of the same kind of government are trying to roll it back.
All too true. Well, our job isn't done. It'll never be done as long as these people are around, Ted, trying to take our basic human rights away, which is what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Thanks for everything. Really an extraordinary update. Thank you. You brought us right up to the current moment. Let us know when I can help you. I'll be here.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Always.
Bye.
Good night. Reverend Ted Pike talking about your liberty, your right to free speech. Very important. Okay, back in a flash.